being attacked. And what's really driven me mad the last few days with Lebanon, and believe me, I feel so, so sad about civilians being killed. It's unbearable. But what has driven me mad is they talk about Israel having been bombarded by Hezbollah either since last October or over the last 8 or 9 years. I was in Israel in 1982. I got married in 1982.
And it was being bombed even then. Alex, I'm so sorry. I had to leave it there, and I know you wanted more time. We will return to this subject, and do call again. Thank you, Alex, calling from Ealing. Coming up after the news at 2, I want to return to something Kemi Badenoch said over the weekend about valid cultures.
On your radio, on Global Player, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 2 o'clock, the UK's reiterated the need for a ceasefire in Lebanon as fears grow of an Israeli ground offensive against Hezbollah. The group's deputy leaders insisted they're ready for any invasion. And Sam Kiley, former foreign affairs editor at Sky News, has told LBC they are a powerful organisation.
Hezbollah is a state within a state in Lebanon. It can mobilise, it claims, 150,000 people. It sent 40,000 people to fight for Assad. It is also part of an international criminal mafia network of drug smuggling and money laundering.
The UK government has again urged all British nationals to get out of Lebanon on the next available flight. Four police officers and a staff member are to face disciplinary proceedings over the David Carrick case. The former Met officer was jailed for a minimum of 30 years for 49 violent and sexual offences, including 24 counts of rape. Fraser Knight reports for LBC.
A watchdog's been looking at the missed opportunities to sack the serial rapist from the police before he was arrested, with multiple complaints being made against him by former partners. Four police officers and a staff member will now be disciplined for claims they failed to follow up on them properly.
After more than 100 years, traditional steelmaking in South Wales will come to an end later. The last furnace at Tata Steel in Port Talbot shuts this evening with the loss of thousands of jobs. It's being replaced with an electric version, but that won't be up and running until 2028. Nia Griffith is a minister in the Wales office and told LBC it was handled very badly.
There could have been a more gradual transition, and we would have been very much up for that. The problem is we came in at very, very last minute when the Conservative government had just been doing nothing, not just for the last 10 months since this threat has been hanging over the plant, but before that, to woo the steel industry, to give them the right conditions to thrive in the UK.
Liz Truss says the four candidates who want to take over as leader of the Tory party haven't acknowledged how bad things are in the country. Kemi Badenoch, Robert Jenrick, Tom Tugendhat and James Cleverly are trying to drum up support at the party conference in Birmingham. Ms Truss also says she feels the Tories would have fared better in July's general election if she'd still been leader. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 52 points at 82.68. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.19. LBC weather staying wet and windy for much of England and Wales, with the heaviest rain in the north, brighter elsewhere with highs of 17 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Jenny Barsby.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello, good afternoon to you. I want to reflect with you on what Kemi Badenoch said over the weekend. She's given a speech at the Tory Party conference, which we'll reflect on a little later with our political editor, Natasha Clark, after she's spoken. But she said over the weekend, both in an article and then when she was in conversation with various journalists on Sunday, that not all cultures are equally valid when it comes to deciding who should be allowed into the UK. And having listened to her elaborate on that view when she was questioned, I think I see what she was trying to get at, but I don't think she got at it very well. So, for example, I mean, she made the point when she says culture, she's not talking about cuisine and clothing. She's talking about ideas. She's talking about values more than ideas. But one thing she said, which I thought didn't fit into the conversation properly, or successfully, really, rather than properly, was when she said those people who come to... She's been struck by the number of people in the country who have very anti-Israel views or hate Israel. And she says that has no place in the UK. Well, I don't think you can... Unless you legislate, you know, and I don't think you should legislate that somebody can't say they don't like Israel and they don't want they don't think the nation should exist. I don't think you can or should legislate against those ideas. You know, if you then go into full on hate speech, anti-Semitism, and attacks on Jewish people, that's a whole different ball game. The law is there to cover those, but I don't think you can argue that somebody can't have a particular political view that isn't legislated against. But I think you can argue, and she did, about certain cultural practices, certain cultural customs that have no place in the UK. And they have no place in the UK, typically, because they're unlawful in the UK and therefore shouldn't be welcomed. And if they are a fundamental part of somebody's identity when they want to come to live in the UK, then I think it's fair enough to question it. So if somebody with five kids wants to come here and intends to inflict FGM on all of their daughters, then no thanks. That's not happening. It's just one example. Or if you come here and think that a woman must not work if she wants to. Of course, you're not obliged to work if you've got family reasons not to, or you can't or whatever, but is ordered not to work by her husband. That's not a value we want in the UK, is it? So I think she was that's what I think she was getting at. Cultural norms and cultural practices that fall outside of not just our values, but our laws to protect people, to protect children, to protect women, to protect people in law. If somebody wants to come and live in this country and disagree with those laws, that, you know, you can't force somebody to agree with something, but you can certainly force them to adhere to the law. You know, that all of us are forced to adhere to the law by the law. So I just think she rather clumsily was attempting to get at something like that, unless I'm misinterpreting what she was saying. And I certainly don't think she was saying some people are better than others, or some cultures, just because they are foreign, are worse than us or below us. I don't think that's what she was attempting to say. But I do think there's nothing wrong, is there, with us defending and standing by the values that we have come to over centuries, and nothing wrong with defending those values that we hold so dear, we protect them by the law. I think that's where she was headed, but she didn't quite get there. Your thoughts on what she was saying? 0345 6060 973, the number. You can text as ever on 84850, and you can send a WhatsApp message, don't forget, on the main phone number, 0345 6060 973. Dr. Raki Besan joins me, political commentator and social integration expert. Good afternoon to you.
Afternoon, Sheila. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Yeah, what was your interpretation of what she was trying to say? Or maybe, I mean, that was mine. I'm not sure whether I'm right, but I just thought it was a clumsy attempt at saying something that, in part anyway, was valid.
Well, I think it could have been a potentially useful intervention, but I agree with you in that it did come across as a tad clumsy. I think what would have really helped that intervention is if Kemi Badenoch had specified very clear cases of uncivilised cultural practices which have no place in British liberal democracy. You've already mentioned their FGM, female genital mutilation. Mm-hmm. I would have also referred to honour-based violence, would have been another example of that. So I think I found it a bit peculiar that she went for the Israel Palestine route in terms of explaining that there's certain cultural values which are not welcome in the UK. And I don't think it's necessarily part of the integration deal that new migrants have to pledge allegiance to Israel. I think that you can actually be a well-integrated member of British society, but also believe that the current Israeli government is ultimately a militaristic, fascistic regime.
Or you can be a well-integrated member of society and argue against Zionism if you want to. It's not a sin, you know. It's not, you're not breaking the law. You can, I mean, I know some people do it to be euphemistic about their anti-Semitism, but not everybody who argues against Zionism is like that by any means.
No, absolutely. So I wouldn't have gone down that road. I think ultimately what we're talking about here is respect for the rule of law. I think you can perfectly present the case against Zionism, and indeed you can pinpoint the practices of the Israeli government, which you could argue violate international law, without, for example, glorifying proscribed terrorist organizations such as Hamas or Hezbollah. So I think that I wouldn't necessarily gone down that path. I think what I would have said is that in our liberal democracy, it's very clear that our laws, even if people disagree with that laws, they need to be respected. There are socially conservative migrants, for example, who might find same-sex marriage unpalatable, but they have to respect that it has been legalised in our country. So I think we're talking about respect for the rule of law. You talked, I think I would have really focused on women's rights, because I think that there are certain parts of the world where the prevailing cultural and social norms are very different to conventional British liberal democratic principles when it comes to the role of women in wider society.
But I think you're right also. I didn't think about the same-sex marriage element, because homosexuality more generally in certain countries, in certain cultures, is
indeed
deeply not just frowned upon but punished by death in some cases. I mean, Nasrallah, absolutely, who we were talking about in the previous hour, he liked nothing more than to give a speech about killing gay people, did he? But you know, those socially conservative people that you describe are actually what my parents were in the 60s when they first came over to Liverpool from Ireland. They were raised in a kind of a quasi-theocracy in Ireland in the 30s, 40s and 50s, so of course they're going to be socially conservative a bit, but they weren't dogmatic, you know, so that when their their kids moved to, well, we were born here, but their kids were raised in Britain, and they wanted us to be, yes, they gave us their stories and their religion and all the rest of it, but they gave us the right to just be living in Britain and making our choices, and that's the key thing, isn't it?
I think that is the key thing, and I think that a big part of this discussion is actually freedom of expression. So in other parts of the world, there's very different cultural and social values when it comes to dissenting against organised forms of religion. Well, in the UK, we have a proud tradition of actually promoting and allowing people to have the space to criticise religious beliefs.
Or poke fun at it.
And indeed, poke fun at it. So I think that that is where you have certain cultural tensions there. And I think that they need to be addressed. And we have to be very clear here, for example, in terms of England, if for some time now, we've had no blasphemy laws. So I think that the point there is people might have their own personal beliefs, but they ultimately have to be respectful of the legal system that they live under.
Do you think, because she also included in this sort of theme, she talked about immigration, how she felt the Conservatives had got it wrong, both some of their actions, but also the conversations that they had about it. Do you think that that nervousness around conversations on immigration makes a lot of people clumsy and fearful when they talk about it? Because I have endless conversations about immigration on this programme with callers and guests. And, you know, most people, it seems to me, because obviously over the years as a journalist, I've seen that conversation develop, and people are much more, they've clearly exercised those muscles more than they were allowed to maybe 10, 15 years ago. And therefore, I think it's a good thing that they have been allowed to, because, you know, clearly some of them will take it as a green light to racism, and you have to challenge that. But for many people, it's just about expressing discomfort or concern or fear. And that's okay, isn't it?
No, absolutely. And I'd make the point that some of the most conservative views that you'll find in Britain when it comes to immigration asylum, you'll find them among first generation migrants who have been settled in the UK for decades. But I think that immigration is an admittedly sensitive issue. But I think that we've seen Robert Jenrick, for example, intervene by writing an article for the Daily Mail on English identity. Now we have Kemi Badenoch's piece in the Sunday Telegraph on immigration. You have a bit more time when it comes to writing an op-ed to very much, you know, articulate your views in writing. So I think that there's not, I'm not quite as forgiving in terms of when people make very clumsy interventions over admittedly sensitive issues.
That's a good point, yeah, because she was originally a Telegraph op-ed, wasn't it? Sunday Telegraph, yeah, before she was discussing it. I don't know. The thing about being free to talk about some of these issues is there are corners where it's all just shut down, aren't there? I hope this programme isn't one of them, but there are corners where people shut down that kind of conversation. Whether it's somebody saying, look, I'm uncomfortable with how my community has changed. You can dig down into that, I think. without it being a battle.
100%. I think that if you don't give people the space to discuss their anxieties, to articulate their concerns over the pace of social change and cultural transformation of their local communities, then you're providing fertile ground for hard right extremists. Mm. That's the truth of it. And I think the problem is that for far too long, we've had mainstream politicians who have failed to engage with those concerns and anxieties. Don't have to pander to those concerns and anxieties, but I think you have to at least encourage people to talk about them. And then you have to think about policies, which ultimately we all want to live in a more socially cohesive society, a more stable democracy. So it's very important that those conversations are had and people have the freedom to articulate their concerns and anxieties, which may not be rooted in racism at all. Quite often, actually, people conflate race with culture. Mm. It might not be even concerns over demographic racial change. It might be more about a certain discomfort over cultural values that people may feel do not necessarily nestle in with what they consider to be traditional liberal democratic principles in the UK.
Well, I often see with the friends that I have, the female friends that I have who are small C conservative, observant Muslims who wear the hijab, they remind me so much that they're often women in their 30s, 40s, raising a couple of kids. They remind me so much of my mum when she was raising us. But because she was a white Catholic and not a brown or black Muslim, she kind of got away with it, if you see what I mean. She got away with it in terms of people's reactions to her. They weren't like, what do you mean you're sending your children to Catholic schools and giving them these ideas about, you know, or whatever ideas. She didn't actually hand across many ideas. She just said, get to school and do your homework. But the point is that we definitely were raised in a non-dogmatic, but in a Catholic culture, without a doubt, in Liverpool, in Irish Catholic Liverpool, you know. But because we're white, it was much less controversial than I think it is for some of my female Muslim friends now who are raising their children in a religiously observant way. They're not extremists. They don't live outside of British culture. They just are doing their own culture and family culture their way. But there's still a great deal of suspicion around that, isn't there, in this country?
No, I'd definitely say so. And I think one of the greatest myths about Liverpool is that because it's traditionally Labour voting, people think it's a very socially liberal city. Actually, there's quite a great deal of odd concern, that sort of quiet traditionalism that runs very deep in many communities across Liverpool. I think you definitely have a point there in terms of suspicion surrounding British Muslim communities. And I think that this is where we need a more nuanced debate surrounding culture. Because I think that we should defend what we consider to be liberal democratic principles, but we have to also understand that there's certain elements of mainstream British culture which are not going particularly well. For example, we're an international hotspot when it comes to family breakdown. There's rampant loneliness among the elderly and the young. So there's a fundamental disconnection between generations. And I think there's been a fundamental loss of community spirit. But I think that's very much a result of the severe industrial decline that we've seen in many parts of England, but also Scotland and Wales as well. So I think that it'd be nice to have a more balanced view where you see, well, actually, in certain migrant communities, they're performing.
They might have something to teach us, yeah.
There might be that conversation where actually do we build a sort of a new culture where we're actually drawing from the best elements from different communities? So I think that there just needs to be a more responsible discussion to be had, because we now live in a country where in some cases ethnic minority communities are outperforming the white British mainstream, whether it's performance at school, how they're integrating the labour market, general family stability. So I think that we just need a more responsible, a more mature discussion on cultural issues.
Well, hopefully you and I have just had one. So thanks for joining me today. Thank you. Dr. Raqib Hasan, political commentator and social integration expert. It's 2:18.
This is LBC.
Are you an absolutely huge fonter or a zoom-inner? Perhaps you're an arm stretched out like a zombie when holding a newspaper, or a squint so tightly at the menu the waiter thinks you're sleeping. At Specsavers, we get it. You don't want to admit it's time to become a glasses wearer. That's okay. We're ready to see you whenever you're ready to see properly. Book an eye test at specsavers.co.uk so you can see clearer. Okay. We'll stop with the ears now.
Curtains drawn at dawn. You wake, and so does your potential. You don't let it snooze or sit around. You act on it. Run with it. past the safety of routine and familiarity to somewhere new, because anything is possible if you choose to make it happen.
Whether you're growing your business, switching careers, or just starting out, make the most of your potential. It all starts with skills. Search Skills for Life.
With the biggest range of cars to buy entirely online, it's no wonder everyone's cinching it.
I cinched it during spin class. Think I'm going to be sick.
I cinched it in this coffee shop.
What are you having?
A five-door hatchback.
This is your captain speaking. I cinched it before takeoff with a 14-day money-back guarantee.
With so many great reasons to buy, the nation aren't just nailing it, they're cinching it. Comparison against equivalent retailers. Visit cinch.co.uk/range claim. Mileage restrictions and terms apply.
Are you a glasses lifter-upper and peer underneather? Or perhaps a peep over the topper? You could even be a peek around the cider. Actually, forget that. It's impossible. Either way, at Specsavers, we get what you're up against. So why not come and see us about becoming a varifocaler? With varifocal lenses, you'll see close up, far away, and everything in between. And they're free, with a single pair of glasses from £70. Include standard varifocal lenses only. Conditions apply. Ask in store for details.
Sheila Fogarty on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
So what was Kemi Badenoch actually trying to say? Neil has called from Nottingham. Hello, Neil.
Hello, Sheila. Well, like you, I'm not a supporter, probably, of Kemi Badenoch, and I think she was very clumsy. Whether she did it willfully or not is another matter. But I think there are some issues sitting behind this, which, as your last reporter alluded to, are actually issues that need a much more nuanced and open discussion than we've had previously. And it's interesting because, I mean, I know Kemi Badenoch, obviously, there's a lot of focus on her words yesterday, but actually, wind the clock back about, what, 6 weeks, maybe a couple of months, Tony Blair was talking about the importance of cultural aspects of immigration, which is not something that he ever talked about in the days when he was a prime mover based on, if you like, the economic, yeah, or solely the economic argument. So
that's right.
I think one of the things she was saying, and again, this comes back to some of the comments that the last commentator was making, was that there are very different, in some regards, approaches to religion, which I think are sitting behind some of these concerns and discussions that need to take place. And by that, what I mean is that we are, correct me if I'm wrong, but we are essentially a secular liberal democracy. So we give regard to religion in terms of people's individual choice to be religious or not. We have a sort of cultural inheritance, I guess, of the remnants of the Church of England. But when there is a
I think that's issue, not just a remnant, to be fair, because you're right. But I think it's worth saying the cultural hold, and I'm not passing comment one way or the other on it, but it's a fact, the cultural hold that Anglicanism still has in this country, not least through the monarchy, through the Church of England, through Canterbury, and
also,
all of that.
Yeah. And also and through history, hereditary peers as bishops or whatever. But at the end of the day, if there isn't a disagreement, if you like, that comes down to, well, what takes precedence? Is it the law of the land or is it people's deeply held religious beliefs?
It's the law of the land.
It is the law of the land, but this is where I think some of the issues are arising. Because, for instance, if we contrast two examples, I can't remember the exact details now, but there have been a couple of cases over recent years where people with very strongly held Christian beliefs objected to allowing a gay couple to stay at the B&B, I think
That's
was
right.
one. And there was another one where a gay couple, I think, wanted a cake making and the bakers opposed it. But in both cases, they were issues that were challenged in law, and the decision taken was that the laws of the land take precedence, and therefore it was illegal to discriminate against gay people on the basis of a religious belief, no matter how fundamentally held. And there's nothing to say you can't still hold those beliefs, but what you can't do is discriminate against people.
Is refuse the service you offer to gay people.
Exactly. Yeah. But if you contrast that, and I'm not saying this to be provocative, because I'm happy for anyone else to shoot me down, but if you contrast that to what happened with the ongoing case of the a grammar school teacher in Batley. Mm. He was driven into hiding through, in effect, people taking great offence at something he may or may not have done, to what extent. And he is still in hiding to this day. Yeah. So the law of the land has not been applied to protect that guy for doing something that we would say is permitted within Western values.
And the law.
And I think when people see that, they feel very uncomfortable, because it's not a massive... leap to be able to make arguments about how the law is being enforced in a impartial way. And that is a problem, because if you have people who ultimately believe that the religious responsibility, if you like, and duties are more important or take precedence over the laws of the land, then that is a fundamental tension point, which, you know, no matter how much you skate around it, you've got to talk about
it. You do. And the thing is, I go back to being raised a Catholic. And again, I can't emphasize how undogmatic my parents were, but still, we were raised as Catholics. We went to Mass every Sunday. We went to Catholic schools, and, you know, variously as adults, me and my siblings are or are not observant Catholics. You know, obviously we're all allowed to make our own choices in the long run. But the point is, whatever view on ethics or something we might reach as individuals because of that Catholic influence, whatever that might be, I understand it does not give me the right to bulldoze anybody else's understanding of what their rights are and what the law actually provides for them. It does not, you know, it's going back to the cake example that you gave. If I believe because of a religious faith or an ethical position that is influenced by being raised a Catholic, if I believe a particular thing, I can believe it because I live in that free, liberal, pluralistic UK that you talk about. Of course I can believe it, and I can adhere to it in my own life, and I can discuss it with others if they ask or whatever. But what I can't do is say it is so supreme over your view on this issue that my religion trumps your law. I cannot do that, and I should not be allowed to do that. And I think there are people in this country, some of them are Christian, some of them are Muslims. I don't know about, I couldn't say from any direct experience about certain Jewish groups, but who do believe that their religious belief, their religious faith, legitimately trumps absolutely everything. In your heart and your mind and your own ethics, it can, but not in the way you go through the world day to day.
But the associated point with that for me, Sheila, is that, you know, without getting into all the detail, there is quite a nuanced debate to take place about how much of that is, if you like, actually required by aspects of religion, or maybe interpretations of aspects. But just so that anyone listening doesn't get the wrong impression from my phone call, this applies equally to anyone. So, for instance, if we had African Christians coming who have a very more fundamental belief of Christianity than we might have here, Anglicans.
Can be very conservative on homosexuality,
to which the answer is, well, that's fine, that's tough. Your first belief, but at the end of the day, the law will be enforced so that if you discriminate against homosexuals, who you may believe are
you'll be
prosecuted. So I think we have to face that head on
now.
Because it is an issue, and the government has to be seen to take an impartial, and dare I say, in some cases, a much braver approach than it has taken in certain regards. I mean, the school teacher in Batley was hung out to dry, not just by the school, but by society more widely. Yeah. And just as a final point, Sheila, if I may, sorry to hog it, but
no, it's an interesting point you're
raising.
People
have got very wound up recently about, you know, the government's response to immigration and events that have taken place. But why is it that the government haven't, for instance, said that if anyone's life is threatened or if somebody is intimidated through, I guess, people taking offence at views that are not illegal views, then the government is going to stand up and protect and take equally explicit action, if you like, to make it clear that those values that the society subscribes to, because that's what they are as well as laws, will actually be upheld in practice. And that, in my view, is missing.
Yeah, I think it is. Not always, but it definitely is in quite signal ways, as you pointed out, Neil. Thank you. Neil in Nottingham. Joseph's call from Brentford. Hi, Joseph.
Hi, good afternoon, Sheila. That's a strong one to follow. But I'll more go from the cultural side of it, Sheila. And I'm no supporter of Kaden Bernard. I would never vote for her. I don't support her political ideologies. Mm-hmm. But I think she hates something that is deeply affecting society. I'm not British. I am from the Caribbean originally. Mm-hmm. And I could see that because I play cricket a lot in England. So I just join an English team and play cricket and adhere to the way they play cricket. And I've seen over the years how that has changed. You now have various groups will come and they'll have their own league within the English system. They wouldn't join the English league. They'll play for their own little league. You basically will feel like a foreigner to go and play for one of the team in England. And that's one kind of, and I think that's the biggest thing that is
Caribbean
happening.
Teams you're talking about or other cultures?
I'm not talking about Caribbean teams because generally, I don't know for myself, but generally most of the Caribbean lads I know will just join an English team and play cricket.
So what, Indian, Afghan, Pakistani?
It's generally Bangladeshi so the more the Bangladeshi league, because if you go to London, there's a lot of Bangladeshi league or in the north, you'll find a lot of these leagues. And that's the point that really bothers me in society, that cultural mix, mixing generally culturally. So apart from kids where you get a mix culturally in school, I don't think much adults get to mix culturally and understand culture and share culture. And I think there is a lot of them, and that's what I see, because you could get a lot of people just in their own little group.
Yeah.
And I think if you're living in England today, which is quite a melting pot of various, if you go back to the religion, they're all Abrahamic religion. We share the same value religiously, respecting each other, fairness. They share the same value. And English society is built on the same value. But when it comes to cultural mix, I don't think it's happening that you should. And there's a lot of little individual pockets that is happening within society.
And I think, I think your cricket example is a really interesting one, Joseph, that because it works the other way around as well, doesn't it? We've seen in Yorkshire cricket, for example, those instances of racism and the club having to look at how it operates. And, you know, we shouldn't tolerate any sports club saying, no, you can't join us because you're not white British. That would be illegal. But you're saying that in cricket, in your experience, some teams are self-excluding in a way. That's an interesting one, the cricket example. Is it necessarily a negative or a rejection of the UK? If you're Bangladeshi or Indian or Pakistani or Afghan and you form your own league or your own team, not your own league, you form your own team. Is that necessarily, you know, sort of thumbing your nose at the country you've come to? Or is it just you and a gang of mates playing the game you played when you lived in India or wherever? I wonder. It's interesting, though. Thanks, Joseph. Joseph in Brentford. 2:31. Let's get some headlines from Jenny Barsby.
The government says it's doing everything it can to secure seats on commercial flights for Britons trying to flee Lebanon. This comes as fears grow that Israel's about to launch a ground invasion against Hezbollah. Four police officers and a member of staff are to face disciplinary proceedings over the David Carrick case. The watchdog's been looking into how the Metropolitan Police dealt with allegations against a serial rapist while he was a serving officer. And the BBC's apologised to Amanda Abington over the mistreatment she received on Strictly Come Dancing. The broadcaster says it's upheld some but not all of the actress's complaints of bullying against former dancer Giovanni Panice. LBC weather, wet and windy for much of England and Wales this afternoon. Brighter elsewhere, a high of 17 degrees.
LBC.
Most homes could save with Octopus Energy.
I'm glad to be part of your company now. I've heard about it and then people coming out on the radio and saying about it. It sounded genuine.
Oh, we're really glad to have you as well.
Octopus Energy, outstanding value with award-winning customer service. Visit octopus.energy/value for our calculation.
Welcome to Abel & Cole, where inconvenience is a good thing. We'll only deliver to your area once a week.
It reduces carbon emissions.
Our food costs a bit more.
We pay farmers fairly.
And our broccoli won't last as long.
Because we don't do preservatives or unnecessary plastic.
An inconvenience store is better for the planet and tastes better too.
Join the thousands of people choosing inconvenience. Search Abel & Cole and order groceries online today. Difficult tastes better. Abel & Cole.
As a nation, we're a generous lot. You could say giving is in our blood. And right now, we need all of you giving taps to give blood and help provide life-saving treatments. Blood is amazing. It can help combat cancer, ease emergencies, help fight sickle cell, and create life-saving medicines. So, please book an appointment and give blood now. We have lots of appointments available at convenient times, and our donor centers are based in the heart of cities. It takes an hour to save up to 3 lives. If you're the giving type, please book an appointment at blood.co.uk today.
Love my tour at Corolla. I do. Love it.
The Corolla's nice and comfy. My kids love it.
Slow maintenance. Looks great. Worth every penny.
My Corolla is great. Yeah. Plenty of room for my kit. Toyota Corolla me nu bought for Sunday. Ehi meri pehli car si. Ehi me horn chalondiya.
For 50 million drivers everywhere, there's one clear choice. Search Toyota Corolla to see why it's the world's favourite car. To verify, visit toyota.co.uk/Corolla data.
32 minutes closer to a romantic break. 32 minutes closer to your week on the beach. 32 minutes closer to that vital overseas meeting. Just 32 minutes from London St Pancras to Luton Airport on the Luton Airport Express. No traffic, no stress, all from just £10. Let's go. Get tickets at lutonairportexpress.co.uk.
Most homes would save with Octopus Energy. Outstanding value with award-winning customer service. Visit octopus.energy/value for our calculation.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with Sheila Fogarty.
I'll get back to your calls in a few moments on what Kemi Badenoch has been saying over the weekend on cultures and the degree to which certain cultural customs should influence whether somebody gets to come to this country or not to stay temporarily or permanently. She's due to give a speech, by the way, Kemi Badenoch, at the Conservative Party conference at around 3. We'll speak to our political editor, Natasha Clark, at 3:30 and get a sense of, yes, that speech, but also the wider story of the Conservative Party conference. Before that, though, I want to talk about Port Talbot for a few moments. Huge news and devastating news for the town, steelmaking town. The last blast furnace at Tata Steel's giant steelworks in Port Talbot is due to close today. The closure will end production of liquid iron and marks an historic day for the UK's biggest steel plant. It will, of course, mean huge numbers of job losses as well. Alan Davis joins me to talk about this, National Officer for Steel for the Community Union. He joins us from Port Talbot. Good afternoon to you, Alan.
Good afternoon.
A difficult day.
Very difficult. The hardest one I've ever had.
You've known about it for some time, but has that made the process any easier today?
We've known about it, but sometimes it's hard to understand that the company would want to do this. So it is difficult, more difficult than what I thought it would be. And yeah, it's devastating for the people that work inside there.
Mm. I mean, almost 3,000 people are due to lose their jobs. Is that right?
Not in this wave at the moment. It's about 2,000 in Port Talbot, 1,900 in late 900s. So 2,000 people in Port Talbot will be displaced and families demolished. It's hard to comprehend at the moment.
And you've got the supply chains as well affected, as is ever the case with this kind of thing.
Yeah, so the contractor population within the works, 1,700 have already gone. They're on less terms than the Tata employees, so they're leaving with statutory redundancy in an area which is already struggling economically.
Tell me your thoughts on this £100 million safety net, as the Welsh Secretary Joe Stevens called it, a fund to support, I guess, existing and new businesses. Is that the idea?
It's £100 million, which is £80 million from the government and £20 million from Tata. It's supposed to ease the transition, but the jobs are not here. That's the thing. We can use it to retrain and reskill people, but ultimately we're trying to keep the jobs within the South Wales corridor. That's going to be difficult. So we're reaching out to businesses now to try and get people into work and utilise some of that transition board money to train them up into further well-paid jobs.
I know that your union believed that compulsory redundancies could be avoided. Clearly the company didn't agree. How could things have been done differently in your view?
So 2,114 people put aspirational requests in to take redundancy. Obviously some of those people couldn't go because they need to retain skills, but there was an alternative plan, a plan that we put forward, community and GMB unions, to save the majority of the people here. But it was just what Tata said was it was too costly to carry out. But it's all right for them to bring in steel from blast furnace made plants from India and Holland and bring it over here. So it's still not green steel when it comes over here, but they shut our plants down. It's not good. It's a bitter pill to swallow.
Do you think they were always going to do it this way?
I had optimism that they would change their mind. They seem to be looking as if they were changing their mind, but ultimately they've carried out the plan that they originally came out with, which is like, it's been a year of this hanging over people's heads. We were trying to change it, and it's a bit of a heartbreaker, really.
What is your message, I suppose, to any of the people direct? I mean, I'm sure you're talking to them, to their faces, as much as on the radio, Alan, but where is the hope? Because that has to be found, doesn't it? We've seen this in other communities that have been stripped in the same way.
Yeah, so the hope is in the MOU, the Memorandum of Understanding, which the unions have been working on with the company, which has investment in that document. We need to see the company now starting to put shovels in the ground and start planning for those investments to take place so people can see a future, because at the moment everything has been bleak, and today with the blast furnace going off, we have to try and somehow give some stability back to the people that's going to be left, and that's not as many as us going, which is, you hear me chuckle on it, but I just can't believe it's happening.
Well, listen, I'm sure everybody listening wishes you and them the very, very best, Alan, and perhaps we'll speak again on you know, in brighter times where there is some light at the end of that tunnel. But thank you for speaking to me today, Alan Davis, National Officer for Steel for the Community Union, joining us there from Port Talbot. We've been talking about Kemi Badenoch's comments over the weekend about some cultures, as she put it, but really we were talking about cultural practices that should, if not disqualify somebody from coming to this country, then at least be a cause for questions. Was she onto something? Tom in Narberth, also in South Wales. Narberth. Hello, Tom.
Hi there. Yes, I was just messaged you about the cricket issue.
Oh, yeah, it was interesting, wasn't it?
It came up a little while ago. Yeah, I mean, I played cricket in around London and home counties for about 40 years until about 10 years ago. Most of the teams were very multicultural. Yeah, certainly the teams I played in were people made of Sri Lankans, people from who were born in England, people who were born in Kenya, all over the place, and we all got on fine. Occasionally, I came up against teams that were primarily of Asian origin or maybe West Indian origin. But again, that was absolutely fine. There was no problem at all between the cultures, if you like. And just occasionally, we had different view on alcohol after a game or something like that.
Some did, some didn't.
But apart from that, there was no rub, and it was just a really good way actually of people integrating.
And also, it could be. This is what I was thinking, that it isn't necessarily always a negative, because you could essentially be England versus India, England versus Pakistan, say, and you could have that rivalry that you would have for real as fans, for example, if you went to watch those countries play.
Yeah, you could, exactly. Well, I must admit, yes, in my experience, it was basically, you know, we were, the sport was our uniting force, if you like. You know, there was no issues of race or religion or culture that came into it. We were just having some fun playing sport together, and there was no problems. So, you know, speaks to the point.
Yeah, no, it's a really good example that you've given us, because I suspected that was going to be the case, that sometimes it was a perfectly friendly process and it wasn't about excluding each other.
Yeah, absolutely.
Brilliant. Thanks, Tom, for your call. Your line isn't great, so I'll leave it there, but thank you. Tom in Narberth. Grace is called from Ealing. Hello, Grace.
Hi. I think, a bit like you said at the beginning, I would agree to some extent with what she said, and I do think we should be very concerned about things in our world like FGM, but I worry very much that her words could be misused, and I do see an awful lot of people make comments that imply a failure to distinguish between cultures and people, because I think that while not all cultures are necessarily equal, all human beings are equal, and I guess that belief is part of our cultural fabric. So if a person's not been privileged, as we have, to be born into a society where women are given rights and where people are considered to be valuable, even if they're vulnerable or disabled or impoverished, we believe that all human beings are equal. Not all people have been born into that kind of culture. Mm. So we shouldn't necessarily just sneer at other people. We should recognise that we're fortunate to be in this culture and hope that we can impart these ideas. But I worry about...
And defend them, because you're right that the overall basis of our laws is that everybody's equal. But that's, we still have to fight for it, don't we? Because in practice, not everybody is equal.
Yeah, I mean, references were made earlier to religion, and I think it's important to recognise that religion, like politics, can mean all sorts of different things. Some people might say, oh, I hate religion, but it's just as varied as political opinions are, really. There's variation, there are serious differences between the Abrahamic religions, though someone said that they're all the same, mm. and within them. I think one thing that's notable, since someone was talking about how the rule of law should take precedence, within Christianity, Jesus didn't come to say what exactly the law of the land should be. He didn't come to create a political revolution. And some of his supporters were really hoping that he would create a political revolution. But actually, that wasn't the point of him coming. The point of him coming was to die in our place, to offer us eternal life, and to teach us to be compassionate to each other. So if someone says that on the basis of their Christianity, the law needs to be a certain way, they may have missed the point of what Christianity is actually about. And ultimately, as Christians, we do really believe that we need to compassion and respect people, including those with different views. Mm.
But the law that is referred to in the Bible is not the law as we would refer to it today, is it? You know, it's a different... They were talking about religious law. Grace, thank you for your call, Grace, in Ealing. It's 2:46.
LBC This Morning on Nick Ferrari at Breakfast.
Kemi Badenoch sparking a furious row yesterday for suggesting that statutory maternity pay is excessive. Lisa's in Rochester. Is that right? You're on maternity leave now, Lisa?
Yes.
Well, congratulations. How long ago did you have the baby?
Just under 4 months. He's 4 months tomorrow. So I think the point that people tend to kind of forget when they're talking about maternity pay and mums kind of getting quote-unquote 3 months is we are literally creating the workforce that's going to be working in the next 20 to 30 years. So mums may now make a decision that, look, I can't afford to go on maternity pay or go on maternity leave. I can't afford to have children, which I think a lot of people are doing.
Nick Ferrari at Breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7.
With Betfair, where odds move faster than polls. Play responsibly.
LBC.
Are you an absolutely huge fonter or a Zoom inner? Perhaps you're an arm stretched out like a zombie when holding a newspaper. Or a squint so tightly at the menu the waiter thinks you're sleeping. At Specsavers, we get it. You don't want to admit it's time to become a glasses wearer. That's okay. We're ready to see you whenever you're ready to see properly. Book an eye test at specsavers.co.uk so you can see clearer. Okay, we'll stop with the ears now.
Did you know you could get the winter fuel payment or the equivalent in Scotland if you get pension credit? Pension credit is worth, on average, £3,900 per year and gives you help with other living costs. It's for people aged 66 or over and on a low income. Check the online eligibility calculator today to see if you're entitled. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. Eligibility criteria apply.
With the biggest range of cars to buy entirely online, it's no wonder everyone's cinching it.
I cinched it during spin class. Think I'm going to be sick.
I cinched it in this coffee shop.
What are you having?
A five-door hatchback.
This is your captain speaking. I cinched it before takeoff with a 14-day money-back guarantee.
With so many great reasons to buy, the nation aren't just nailing it, they're cinching it. comparison against equivalent retailers. Visit cinch.co.uk/range claim. Mileage restrictions and terms apply.
Hey, you. You, with the hands at 10 and 2. Ever felt that nudge that your motor might need a little TLC? When it's time to go under the hood, eBay's got you covered. From mirrors to headlights, find all the right parts by entering your reg. And if it doesn't fit, eBay Assured Fit means you can return it for free. That's our money-back pledge. Find the right part at the right price with eBay Assured Fit. Exclusions apply. See ebay.co.uk for more details.
Are you a glasses lifter-upper and peer underneather? Or perhaps a peep over the topper? You could even be a peek around the cider. Actually, forget that. It's impossible. Either way, at Specsavers, we get what you're up against. So why not come and see us about becoming a varifocaler? With varifocal lenses, you'll see close up, far away, and everything in between. And they're free, with a single pair of glasses from £70. Include standard varifocal lenses only. Conditions apply. Ask in store for details.
Leading Britain's conversation. Sheila Fogarty. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
Kemi Badenoch is going to speak in about 10 minutes at the Conservative Party conference, but she said some stuff over the weekend that I've been enjoying talking to you about this hour, about aspects of some cultures, cultural values, cultural norms that simply will not fly in this country, was essentially the point she was making. I'm not sure she made it very well, but I think that's what she was getting at. Abdul is called from Plasto. Hello, Abdul.
Hiya. What Kemi said about these Bangladeshi people or Indian or Pakistani people, it just always...
I don't think she was specific, was she, about those
people? Yes, she did mention Bangladeshi.
Did she?
Yeah. Yes, yeah, if you look at it, she did mention Bangladeshi people.
Okay.
So why is there always people picking on one culture, one race? So, for example, when Trevor McDonald's about 10 years ago done a program for Channel 4, he went round up north asking Asian people, when did you last invite white people to your house? He never asked a white person, when did you last invite Asian person to your house?
Mm.
All right? It's always that we need to integrate. I moved in, my neighbors moved out. Why? I didn't ask you to move out. It's like, for example, even on the worst gate where I live, there was hardly Asian when we were 87 when I moved in. And eventually the property price gone up. They all moved out, sold the house, and they all moved out. People bought in. It's no one asking to leave. No one saying, oh, you have to move.
Mm.
So it's always, you ask, oh, when did you last went to a white person's house? You never ask a white person, when did you last invite you? We had a guest there when we first moved in. When did they come into your street? Did you ask him to come around your house? You know, no one asks this big question to the white person.
And has that been,
we have to justify.
Has that been your experience, Abdul?
Oh, yeah, without doubt. I mean, I've moved in Plaster from Forest Gate. My neighbours didn't want to come and see me. I went up to him and introduced myself. When my neighbour moved, and my new neighbour moved in, I actually left my driveway to park the car because they didn't have a permit.
Mm.
And it's always, it's these people, they don't integrate. But you never ask them why they're moving out, why they're not talking to these people. What's they afraid of?
And can I ask you, are you a religious man, Abdul?
I am a religious man, and I've got nothing against without a religion.
No, I'm not suggesting you have, but
yeah.
do you, are there some aspects of you following your religion that...
Will it stop us to integrate? No.
No, that's not what I'm saying, actually, because you can be born in this country and have a religion, and aspects of your religious belief can clash with the law as it stands in this country. That's not just about immigrant. That's not an immigrant question. That's really a religious question. I just wonder, is there anything for
every
you?
Every religion has got aspects, but as long as we live in this country, we have to follow the law. If you look at Judaism, if you go to the Sabbath, you're not allowed to touch thingy. They make a special arrangement for Judaism in London. But if we had to ask for it, we'd be calling something else. When we look at Muslim,
which special arrangement?
Light. For example, they're not allowed to touch a traffic light button during the Sabbath or sometime. Special time. So they have to remove all the traffic light from the North London. They won't have their thingy. So they can't say they're going to have their own buses now. So imagine we ask for this, we'd be...
Who's having their own buses? You mean like a private bus that they've had?
That's right. No, Sadiq Khan will provide for the Jewish people to North London to travel Orthodox Jew one place to a place, just exclusively for Jew. He's looking into that.
Looking into it. It's not a decision that's been made.
No, he has no decision. But
I mean, I genuinely don't know about that. But it's an interesting thing you've told me. I'll look into it now you've told me. Abdul, thank you. Abdul in Plasto. Susan in Exeter. I want to make time for Susan. Hello, Susan.
Oh, hello. Well, I just wanted to say that I agree 100% with Kenny Badenoch. I think people who choose, who want to live in this country and are legally here and legally accepted, meet the criteria. I should adopt our culture. That's it. If they don't like the culture, do not come.
But wait, when you say adopt our culture, what do you mean?
Yes.
But what do you mean?
For example, we had a situation in Rotherham where for 30 years, young girls, I understand the intercourse with a man is called rape. Young girls were raped for 30 years. The authorities knew all about it and everything else. We know the community, that was 96%. Of one community were guilty of this. The police, local authorities, schools were all powerless to do anything in case they're accused of racism. Now, the people of the community of the perpetrators, they never did that to any of their kids.
How do you know?
Because I've read it.
I mean, you're right. It's a matter of record that the police and other authorities have been criticised and have accepted those criticisms that it was cultural sensitivity that made they were less active than they should have been to deal with those men. You're right. But we don't, you know, it's still true, Susan, that the vast majority of child sexual abuse in this country happens in people's homes with family members or family friends. And that means that the vast majority of child abuse is still perpetrated by white men.
Okay, well,
that's part of our culture, Susan.
Yes, I understand that, and that's happening all over the world. Men do that to women. Okay,
and children.
Men do that to women and children, which is horrendous. But this could have been stopped.
Yes, it could. So could a lot of the other stuff. So could a lot of the other stuff, like, for example, domestic violence that happened for years and years and years without anybody saying anything about it, because culturally, in our culture here in the UK, we didn't speak about what went on in people's homes. Culturally, that allowed for women to be beaten up on a regular basis, still does. Culturally, it allowed for children to be sexually abused on a regular basis, still does. That's part of our culture too. I'm not denying the particular makeup of the Rotherham story by any stretch of the imagination. But when that's the first example about child abuse you give, you must also recognise...
What's about child abuse?
It is about child abuse. But it is about child abuse.
That was about cultural differences.
But there is no cultural difference. White fathers abuse their children every day of the week in this country. There is no culture that doesn't have child abuse in it. I've already...
Other examples.
Okay.
Okay. Well, what about stoning of homosexual men? Some people who live in this country, their culture, they want to stone homosexuals.
Outrageous.
Well, we don't want that culture brought here.
No, we don't want that culture brought here.
We don't want people who think that's a good idea.
No, I agree
in
with
our
you.
Country. That's I what agree. I mean.
Yes.
That's what I mean.
And that's what she meant, I think.
Exactly. I come back to my... I agree with her 100%. If you want to live here, adopt our culture.
Well... You see, the reason I have a problem with the, if you want to live here, adopt our culture thing is, what do you mean by adopt our culture specifically? Do you mean live under the law? That's fine. But do we really want...
Yes.
But do you also mean have a Sunday roast on a Sunday or else?
No.
You mean laws.
Sunday lunch on a Sunday is a custom.
Customs are culture. Customs are culture. Susan.
Okay, culture. I mean, the way we are generally, I mean, I know God's gone out of the window, but we are generally a Christian country. Generally speaking, whether Christians are practicing or not is another thing. But that's where we've come from. There are roots. And all this pulling statues down because of something happened long before, hundreds of years before we were all born, all of that has to stop. It's nonsense. You can't rewrite history. And pulling a statue down, it doesn't do anything except annoy everybody.
Which statues are you talking about? You're talking about the slavery stuff?
Oh, yes, all of that. And they don't like church, and they don't like this, and they don't like that. You know, history cannot be rewritten. We put those statues up because that's what we want to do. We don't want anyone else pulling them down.
Yes, but some of the people wanting those statues removed are people born and raised in this country whose roots are entirely in this country for centuries, and they just disagree with you, Susan.
Okay, we'll disagree, but don't pull them down. Write your MP or something. That's what we do in this country. We write to our MP. We don't take that sort of action.
I'm still curious what you mean when you say, come to live here, follow our culture. Because that, to me, says, be exactly like me. And I don't want everybody to be exactly like me or
no,
you.
No, I don't want... That's robotic. Who would want that?
Well, that's what it sounded like when you said it.
Okay, well, then I apologise. That's certainly not what I meant. That would be a lunacy to have everyone the same. I mean, the general way we do things, the things that we value, the things that we think are a good idea,
that we support by law.
Everybody knows exactly what I mean.
I was just wanted to be clear what you meant. But yeah, you're talking about the law here, aren't you? If you come to this country, respect our laws. Respect the things that we have made so valuable to us that we have protected them by law. So the rights of people not to be stoned for being gay, the rights of women to make choices in their own lives, like whether they want to work and how many children they want to have and whether they want to marry and whether they want to be educated, all of that kind of stuff. It's respecting the law. Thank you, Susan. Susan from Exeter.
On your radio, on Global Player, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 3 o'clock, British nationals are again being told to get out of Lebanon while commercial airlines are still flying in and out of the country. It's as fears grow that Israel's about to launch a ground invasion against Hezbollah. Officials in Lebanon say more than 1,000 people have been killed in the past 2 weeks, while up to 1 million people may now be displaced. Ahmed Bayram is the Middle East media advisor at the Norwegian Refugee Council. He told LBC the outlook doesn't look good.
Now things will, of course, deteriorate with, for example, healthcare system being squeezed even further, medication running out fast. And of course, despite the reassurances that we get from there, we do expect, you know, the economic aspect to be, to be crippled.
Four police officers and a staff member are to face disciplinary proceedings over the David Carrick case. The watchdog's been looking into how the Metropolitan Police dealt with four allegations against a serial rapist while he was a serving officer. He was eventually arrested in October 2021 and jailed last February. Tory leadership hopeful Tom Tugendhat has apologised for the infighting between Conservative MPs and the drubbing at the general election. He's been taking part in a Q&A at the Conservative Party conference in Birmingham.
Thousands of activists, hundreds of candidates put their absolute all into a campaign and were let down by others. It wasn't this party that failed. It wasn't the ideas that failed. It was the centre that failed. And we need to own that. And so from my perspective, let me just say to all of you, I'm sorry.
Unite has branded the thousands of job losses, one of the biggest steelworks in the world, industrial vandalism. After more than 100 years, the last furnace at Tata Steel in Port Talbot shuts this evening. It's being replaced with an electric version, but that won't be up and running until 2028. Wales Office Minister Nia Griffiths says they're doing what they can to soften the blow.
We're also putting in help for the supply chain workers because their companies can no longer sell to Tata, for them to get retraining and for those companies to...